everyone, and welcome back to the Masters Review Podcast. My name is Colm, and this is episode 24 for the week of September the 9th. My name is Colm, I already said that, but there's no I in the World Word podcast, so I cannot do this alone. I need the heart and soul of the NationalsReview.com. He's no other than Mr. Charles Flegel.
Colm, how you doing?
I don't know. I'm not going to say I'm doing excellent because we had to suffer through Monday Night Football.
Oh, and it's just...
Luckily, there was a Nats game.
It's piling on. And now the Nats are... Well, as we're watching, the Nats are still winning. If the score holds tonight, there'll only be six games out of the wild card.
So it is mathematically possible is what you're telling me.
We'll get into that. But before we do...
Yes.
Do you have a beer?
I do.
Something to drink?
I'm not drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Well, the summer's over.
The
leaves are starting to change, even though it's 90-something degrees today.
So I've gone into getting into a beer that I don't think I've ever, like, bought. I've had before, but I don't think I've ever purchased. I purchased it now twice in two different 12-pack bottles, and that is...
Is it Jenny Winterbrew?
It is not Jenny Winterbrew. It is actually Philadelphia's oldest brewery, Yuengling Light.
Yuengling Light, huh?
Yeah, which I would say tastes like water with a little bit of beer taste in it.
I don't even remember what it tastes like. You know what my I've been at my in-laws a lot the last couple of weeks,
right.
And they had Yuengling Black and Tan, which I like. And I don't really know what it tastes like or what it's supposed to taste like, right. Because a black and tan is supposed to be two
mixed
liquids. And I guess it kind of tastes like a mix between a lager and a stout. But whatever it is, I like it.
So. Yeah, I like it too. Yeah, it's easy to drink as well.
Yeah, but that's not what I have tonight.
What do you have?
A Brooklyn Lager.
Ooh.
I'm a big fan. It's one of my more go-to lagers.
Right.
For sure. I like it. It's a little darker. It's good.
Great logo by the company, too. I love that logo they have.
Yes. And a great place to go if you're in the area is the Brooklyn Brewery. It's just a nice place to sit and drink beers.
Hmm. I need to go there. I need to go to New York.
Which reminds me, when you think of Queens, Colm,
yes.
What do you think of? What are the landmarks of Queens? Because I lived in New York for a few years, and there's three things that come to mind.
I think of GFQ, but that's because I work
well,
with them.
Your other podcast, video podcast,
yes.
Guys from Queens.
Yes.
Everybody check it out. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, but that would probably be – or I would think of the – is it the Hammerstein Ballroom?
I don't think that's in Queens. I think that's in Manhattan.
You're right. There's another ballroom there that ECW used to wrestle at in Queens.
So you think of wrestling, which is not actually outside of the realm of people I think of from Queens. But the things I think of from Queens are basically, when I think of Queens, I think of Shea Stadium and the surrounding.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's like, totally true.
The tennis complex is out there, and we're actually just at the...
Oh, like, that's right. So the Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Yep. And then I think of JFK.
Yeah.
And I think of the Astoria Beer Gardens just because I've been there and it's awesome. But
ooh, I've never been there.
I was watching the Nats games the last few days. There's so few people there. I know Shea and JFK, or I guess City Field, I should say, not Shea, are sort of intertwined and interlinked because they're Queens. They're probably two of the biggest landmarks in Queens and all that. But I was surprised at how loud the airplanes are at that stadium, and I don't know if it's because there's no crowds there. I know in Shea, it was like there used to be – I don't know if you remember like baseball video games. If you played at Shea, they would show an airplane flying by.
That's right. I remember that.
It's like a thing about Shea, and I guess it's a thing about City too. But my God, it's like they're right on top of the airport. It's ridiculous. You can just hear it, and like FP is like, oh, let's just ignore that.
Let's just forget about that.
It's crazy.
Wow.
I haven't been to City Field yet. I'd like to go.
I have not been either. I've been to Shea. I think I went with you to Shea.
Years and years ago, I think we went together. And then I went once more. The partner in my office when I was working in New York was a big Mets fan, to his ultimate disappointment every year.
I bought a Japanese baseball player name, and I can't remember his name, who played for the Mets. Do you remember?
Kaz Matsui.
Kaz Matsui, that's it.
Yes, the Metropolitans. We had a friend in college who used to wear a Ray Ordonez jersey, and he was a huge Mets fan, but he would only wear it out to the bars at night when the Mets lost. And I asked him why, and he said, well, I don't want to look like I'm rubbing it in people's faces. And that was back in, like, 99 when or 2000 when wearing a Mets jersey out might actually be rubbing something in people's faces. It's been that long.
Wow.
Oh, Ray Ordonez.
I wonder what he's doing now.
Not playing baseball professionally. Well, not playing Major League Baseball, at least.
Yeah.
So let's go back to what you were talking about before with the mathematical possibility.
Yes. Talk to me about this, because as I look at the infamous wildcard standings, I see Pittsburgh, of course, on top.
Mm-hmm.
I see Cincinnati right there with them.
Yeah, Cincinnati, I think, is two games or a game back. They're two losses.
And then it's us, and then I don't really think we have to worry about what's below us, in my opinion.
No, I don't think you have to do that.
Yeah.
Look, the Nats are 74-69 right now. If they win tonight, 75-69. The Reds are 82-63. If they lose tonight, which they are doing, 82-64. So...
Mm-hmm.
The Nats have gone, I'm not assuming they win tonight, and that's a big assumption still, 21-9 in their last 30 games.
Yeah. And if they win tonight, a four-game winning streak.
So let's say in the remaining 18, they do about that and win two for every one.
Okay.
Go 12-6.
Okay.
They would get to 87-75.
Wow, which is respectable in my opinion.
It's a respectable record.
Right.
In order for the Reds to go 87-75, they would have to finish the season 5-11. Not easy. Now.
Not easy. But we're getting help tonight by a team that's terrible. So
yes, the Cubs are winning, and the Nats are only up by one as we're talking. So hopefully they can at least pull out a win here, so we're not going to have to redo the math. But
right.
the it's still in the Nats' hands in that if they really rattle off some wins and go – something ridiculous like 15-3, then an 8-8, perfectly possible 8-8 by the Reds.
Yes.
Would keep it tight.
That makes you feel more comfortable.
So basically, and then of course, if the Nats go, 18-0 for the remaining games, then...
right? Which okay, I mean, it's not impossible. The Oakland A's did it with Miggy one year.
Yeah, then the Reds could go 11-5 in time. So, right. You know, if the Nats don't lose the rest of the season, then the Reds would still tie them by going 11-5. So you look at 18 games left, you look at six back, and you go, well, it's not insurmountable. But when you start looking at what the teams would have to do,
right,
it's pretty insurmountable. Right. Now, the only way you could pretty much push yourself in is don't lose.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Nats want to go 18-0, then we can talk. Other than that, I don't have a whole lot of faith.
You know what? I have faith in that except for the last series that we play.
Who do we play at the end?
Atlanta.
Well, we're playing Atlanta this weekend, too.
Oh, that's right. Wait, did I get... I thought it was last series. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we play Atlanta now. I know we play Philly again.
Well, let's go through the schedule and see if we can... Like looking at the Redskins schedule or something, let's see if we can pick out the wins and losses.
Right.
So, oh, you're right. They play the Phillies this weekend.
Okay.
Then they play the Braves next week.
Yeah.
Then the Marlins.
Which is fine.
Then they go to St. Louis and to Arizona. It's quite possible by then that St. Louis has the division locked up.
How is it that St. Louis is like the best team ever in September? Like, they're so good.
But they're only a game up on Pittsburgh and two up on Cincinnati. They're going to be fighting for that, lead record position so they can get home field throughout. So... I don't know. I don't think St. Louis is going to be a laydown team when the Nats get there. Now, Arizona, on the other hand, probably will be.
Yeah, I think they're bringing up young talent now and evaluating.
they are not delusional about their possibilities of making it because they're two games behind us. We are. So, good. Why not? Be delusional.
Yeah.
Keep playing. Keep winning. You know, this team was picked to win the World Series by a lot of people, including myself and you.
Yeah, of course.
They're going to probably finish sixth out of, you know, five playoff teams in the NL. They're going to finish right out. I don't think they're going to finish seven back. I think they'll finish three or four back.
Sounds about right.
And they'll have just missed it. They'll be in others receiving votes in the poll for the playoffs, basically.
But how ridiculous is it if I said to you right now it's September 10th, which team would have the best record in the major leagues? Would you have ever said the Boston Red Sox?
Probably not have guessed that, but I don't think it's surprising because they had such talent last year and they just like crapped the bed, basically.
Yeah.
But they are, I mean,
they're look, so good right now.
Lester had a horrible year, but Lester's a great pitcher.
Yeah.
Buchholz is pitching like incredibly well.
Yeah, incredible.
He's healthy. Lackey turned it around and became good again. And Lackey was never as bad as like they had Beckett last year, and Beckett sucked all year.
Right.
Lackey had a horrible year last year, but it was such an anomaly from what he had done before. Now, I don't know that anybody expected him to be as good as he is, but, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, they're getting good starting pitching, mostly from Lester and Lackey, and a little bit from Buchholz. And they hit
Jake
the crap
Peavy's
out of
Jake Peavy's playing.
Yeah, Peavy's okay. pitching for him, and Dempster is doing all right for him, and... You know what's more surprising to me?
What?
I just looked it up. David Ortiz is hitting .312.
Oh, yeah. He is just having an incredible year.
It's all those steroids, man.
Yep.
He loves them.
Yep.
You know, it's amazing that like somebody like A-Rod just gets ripped. And part of that is because of A-Rod's personality.
Yeah.
But just demolished. And like Ortiz admitted to using performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
And people love him.
I love him. He's Big Poppy.
I mean, Mike Morse, another guy that like we here love. He was suspended for steroids when he was in the minor leagues, but it was the minor leagues.
I mean, if you look at his career, Big Poppy, you can see he probably started taking steroids in between the 2000-2001 year. Because this is a guy who went 10 home runs, 18 home runs, 20, 31, 41, 47.
I actually don't think that's an indicator. I think when he moved from... You know, he was a young player with a power prospect, and he always hit with power. He just didn't have a ton of home runs because he didn't play a lot. And mm-hmm. then in Minnesota, they basically, like, platooned him, and he did well. Mm-hmm. But they were like, he can only hit lefties. And then he went to Boston and was like, no, I can hit everybody and eat them.
God.
And since then, he got amazing. But I think, I don't know.
I'm just looking at 2000. He had 415 at-bats and only hit 10 home runs. And then in 2002...
He was like 22 at the time. Like,
well, that is true. He was really young.
I'm not sold that like steroids makes you the greatest home run hitter ever. I'm just not. I think it definitely helps, and it helps you in a long season. So like guys like Bonds and Sosa and McGuire were able to be good for 162 games. And a guy like Chris Davis, through the rigors of the season, isn't going to be able to do that because he's not taking... You know.
Oh, right, right.
So, but I don't think it makes you a home run hitter when you're not. I just don't think it does that to your muscles and makes you like, unless you're like working out constantly, which these guys aren't doing. What I think it does is it helps combat fatigue. And so guys can hit more home runs over the course of 162 games because they're less tired.
Right.
But I don't think a guy goes from 10 to 20 because of steroids. I think he goes from like 25 to 35 because he's feeling good more often. You know what I mean?
Right.
But nobody will ever
but,
know
yeah, but
what it does.
I think I still love Big Poppy, regardless.
He's hard not to like.
Yeah.
One of my favorite ESPN commercials ever is, do you remember the commercial with Big Poppy and Jorge Posada sitting
yes.
in like ESPN studios?
Yeah.
And Jorge like puts a hat on and it's totally flat brimmed and Poppy looks at him and he's like, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know, I'm a catcher. I never wear a hat. So Poppy takes his Yankees hat and like, folds it and bends it and puts it on his head to shape it. And the red, that big green Red Sox mascot that looks kind of like a big green version of Big Poppy walks by and just is like, what? And drops his stuff and like walks
off. So great.
And Ortiz is like, no, it's not what you think. Good one.
Tell me about, you wrote an article the other day. I didn't tell you. I was reading it about Mr. Corey Brown. Talked about many times before. And it seems to be me, and obviously from your article, that he's starting to put things together.
Well, you know, Corey Brown is not a prospect per se.
No.
He's old for a baseball player. He's 28. He's sort of at the age where, you know, or maybe he's 27 right now. He's at the age where, like, most people are kind of already good if they're any good. But, you know, he's come up. He hasn't had many at-bats. I think he's got under 10 plate appearances. But has a home run and a double and a couple hits. And he's looked good in the limited time he played. But what I wrote about was basically that they wasted him in
AAA?
In the minors this year.
Yeah.
And
they really did.
Reason I said that is I don't have any sort of false hopes of Corey Brown being like an 800 OPS guy.
Right.
Like, I think in a good year, if he got 250 at bats, he could hit 250 and hit 15 home. He could kind of do what Tyler Moore did last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, people go, oh, wow, that guy's got power. And use him at the right times, and you know, he hits some home runs, and he bats enough that his, you know, he hits 250, 260, so his on base is high. But I get why they didn't start him at the beginning of the season, because they were coming on with Moore and Bernardina and Lombardozzi, who all had really good years last year.
Mm-hmm.
But by June, it was pretty obvious that all of them were sucking, like really bad. And they ended up sending Moore down. They kept Bernardina and Lombardozzi on the team. You can understand why they kept Lombardozzi, because they needed a backup middle infielder. But then they brought Cabernas up, who was really like an infielder that they were playing in the outfield. And they were basically using like Cabernas and Lombardozzi and Bernardina as this backup outfielder. By the way, with Worth and Harper hurt, they were starting a lot.
Yep.
If you remember when the Nats were really sucking and they were getting no production out of their left field because Harper was out,
mm-hmm.
it was those guys. And I just never understood why they didn't bring Brown up.
Right.
Again, I don't think he's going to be this great guy in the majors, but I really thought at some point they were going to realize that they were getting no production. I actually in the article I put together, they had 433 plate appearances between Moore, Bernardina, Cabernas, and Lombardozzi as DHs or left fielders, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I took out Lombardozzi's time at second base and third base, and I took out Moore's time at first base. Combined, in those 433 plate appearances, they hit 186.
Ugh. What's even worse is that on-base percentage that you have there. Oh.
238.
Oh.
I mean,
that's not even a major leaguer.
That's, by the way, 433 plate appearances is two-thirds of a season for a full-time starter.
Yep.
That's what they played in left field and DH this – or not DH, pinch hitting this year. I don't know if I said DH before. What I meant is those four guys as pinch hitters or in left field or in the outfield in general. And so again, I get why they played them in April and May. Those guys had done so well last year, but they sucked by June.
Yep.
And you know, I'm not gonna sit here and say Corey Brown coming up in June would have given them the seven games to bring them within the wild card.
Right.
But I don't know if a game here or there would have mattered. Imagine if they were four games back right now.
Exactly.
Imagine if he had won them a game or two that was just so close that they should have won and they didn't because they got nothing out of their left fielder. And they went on a roll, and he didn't win them the game. And nobody would have looked back on it this year and said, well, thank God they had Corey Brown up. But at the same time, it changed the attitude of a team that wasn't playing well, and they went on a roll, which they never did this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their role this year is now.
Yep. Yeah, that is so true. Their role this year is now. You're so right. But another thing, look, in your article with that the stat breakdown, if you take away Tyler Moore's RBIs, you have, 13 RBIs from a total of you'd have to take away the best, 300 at-bats.
Yeah.
Like, that's so bad.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is just horrible. A 186 batting average. It doesn't matter what else you're doing. If you're batting
18%.
Under 300, there's nothing you can do to make that up.
Yeah.
They're slugging under 300 as a group. It's just, it's awful. And I don't think Corey Brown would have hit 300 this year. I think he would have, but that's an OPS of like 520.
Yeah.
He would have beaten that. He would have beaten that by 100 points at least. And you just wonder how differently the team would have been. Because the other thing about Brown is he wasn't down in the minors because of his glove. He's an excellent fielder.
Right, right.
And so...
Well, I thought the only reason he was down in his minors was because it was bodies. He lost the numbers game. The other guys had that great year.
From what I've gathered is every time I put out a tweet, everybody says to me, Corey Brown's disadvantage is he's a lefty.
Oh, because God.
He's never going to play for, like, Moore can play for La Roche against a tough
right.
left. Not that they would ever sit Harper, but I mean, look, there were times when the greatest lefties would sit against a guy like Randy Johnson. So
true,
nobody comes
true.
To mind, but let's say the best lefty.
Clayton Kershaw,
who's a righty. But let's say the best lefty is just dealing for the last three games and Harper's not feeling good and Davey just says, you know what, we're going to sit him. You want to put in a righty, not a lefty. And so then Bernardina's a lefty. And so their number four outfielder was Bernardina. So they're not going to have their number five outfielder be a lefty too.
Right.
And so really you can blame it all on Bernardina.
So we also saying the reason that he came up now to blame it more on Bernardina is because of the trade.
I think that's definitely part of the reason. I mean, it's also rosters expanded, right? So,
right.
You bring up guys on the 40-man roster instead of on the 25-man roster. But, yeah, the reason he didn't come up was most likely because of Bernardina. But, like, at some point they should have realized Bernardina wasn't doing it for them. And, you know, I think the point that I made in the article, and I'm not going to get the quote exactly right, but, like, it doesn't matter if you're a lefty or a righty. You just need to be able to hit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Bernardina wasn't doing that. Lombardozzi wasn't doing that. Moore wasn't doing it. And Cabernas wasn't doing it. So maybe they should have tried somebody else. And so, I don't criticize Rizzo a ton. I think he's put together a really solid team.
Yeah.
I think this team doesn't need to make a whole lot of changes to be in contention next year. But I really don't like the fact that Brown didn't get called up until September. I really think that could have really been the difference in the season for them. And it doesn't show up in like the mathematical wins, like, oh, he would have added, you know, if Corey Brown came up and hit well enough in place of those four guys, he might have added a statistical win or two, you know, if you do expected runs and all that. But to me, it's more than that. It would have been a team that was not, you know, they were fumbling and struggling so much that you just wonder if a win here or a win there could have made a difference.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't have the answer to that.
But win here or there right now would totally make a difference. Like you said, that number, the magic number of six becomes four.
Yeah. What if they won two more games and they were four back and they won tonight and the Reds lost and they're four back instead of six?
Yeah.
It's a different story. I mean, it's still a hill to climb. And, you know, people say a couple weeks ago, people were saying like, oh, they look like they're playing well and they're in good shape. Well, it's still like the bottom of the ninth. And you're down by three runs, just because you have a man on first, you start to get excited. It doesn't mean you're at the advantage. You'd still rather be the team pitching.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think they'd be in better shape if they had him up. So,
right. Well, let's go more positive and talk about our possible 520 game plus home run hitters. And
all
do
right,
you think
so,
it's going to happen?
Well, if you had asked me before tonight, I would have said probably. But now I think it's, you know, as long as Harper comes back and plays with, you know, in a couple days, I think there's a good shot because LaRoche just hit one. So LaRoche is at 19 home runs.
Yep.
Desmond, Zimmerman, and Worth are all over 20.
Right.
And Harper's at 19.
Right.
So basically, if LaRoche and Harper each hit a home run the rest of this year, five guys with 20 home runs or
more. That's pretty impressive.
And by the way, and I'm not going to count this in the statistic, but Ramos has 12 home runs.
Exactly.
In under half a season.
Right. How many bats does he have? 227. Imagine if he played a full season. He'd have over 20 right now.
Right. But let's not count him for a minute because I'm not counting anybody else and anybody else that's hurt. Do you know how many other teams in the league are going to have five guys with 20?
I would say three other teams.
Zero. Zero in the National League.
Oh, the
Toronto
National.
Toronto will probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Toronto's not there yet. Nobody else in the American League either.
That's amazing. I would have thought the Orioles did.
The Orioles are a close one. So Toronto has Aaron Sebia.
Yep.
Encarnacion.
Yeah.
And Bautista.
Yeah.
And then Rasmus and Lind are like, they need, I think Rasmus is at 18. If he's still playing, I don't know how much Colby Rasmus is playing.
I know Lind is at, 17 now?
No, Lind's at 19.
19?
So,
okay.
And then Baltimore's pretty close. They obviously have Chris Davis and Wieters and Hardy and Jones.
Jones is right so there,
they, isn't they, they have, No, Jones has it. They have four guys, but they don't have a fifth guy. Machado only has like 12 or 13.
Yeah, he doesn't that many.
Now, right. Next year, Machado will probably.
Right.
And they'll probably.
Wow, that's really impressive. But then you look at RBIs, and we don't have a single guy even close to 80.
That's because nobody's getting – there weren't enough guys on base this year.
So weird that you have that stat of so few teams having five guys at over 20.
They had a balanced attack this year.
Weird.
Because they have so many guys hitting home runs, but they just weren't getting on base enough. And it's gotten better. They were at the bottom of the barrel for the longest time this season, and now they're pretty much at league average with on-base percentage. And that's why they've been doing so much better, because they've been scoring enough runs.
Now, I have a question for you going to this. Now, midseason, we got rid of Eckstein as our hitting coach. Do you think now, after some months have gone by, that was really necessary and helped us at any way? Because in my opinion, I don't think it was a good idea.
I don't think it was a bad idea. I'm not sure that that's the reason. I kind of thought that this was bound to happen. That, you know, there's the old saying that guys tend to do what they do on the back of their baseball cards every year.
Right, right.
Like, they were not as bad as they were playing. They had too much talent, too many good hitters, and so they weren't as bad of a team as the offense seemed to show. Mm-hmm. And some of that was the drag by basically Espinoza and the four backup outfielders and Suzuki in their overall numbers. But some of it was, you know, Span didn't play that well. LaRoche had a bad year. Worth came on later. Desmond came on later. Zimmerman came on later. So that's part of the reason why the first half was so bad.
Right.
But the fact is, a lot of it's injuries, right? I mean, Jason Worth's not going to win the MVP this year, and it's not because
he's having an incredible year.
He's having an incredible year. We should get into that in a minute. Yeah. But part of the reason he's not going to win the MVP and probably won't get that many votes is because he's going to finish the season with like 500 plate appearances, maybe. And maybe a little bit more than that. And that's just not enough.
Right.
He was hurt. Harper was hurt. Zimmerman was hurt. I mean, the guy with the most plate appearances, it's basically Span and Desmond were the only guys that were healthy all year. Zimmerman was healthy most of the year. He didn't miss much time.
Right.
And same with LaRoche. But, you know, Harper and Worth out, those are two of your best hitters. And your replacements suck. So, but at the same time, to your question,
yeah,
I guess I'm not as negative to you as you are. I think there's some validity in making a change for the sake of change. Some people say that's just a dumb thing to do, but
right. I don't know. Just we were so good with him.
Voices.
We were so good with him last year, and then just to have like a bad start to the season and
right.
Just
well, it was more than a bad start. True. It was a bad like 4 months by the time.
And it's hard to even defend it now that we're actually playing well.
Right, they're hitting well. Well, yeah. I mean, and who knows? I mean, this is more of the question of, like, what's going to happen with the team? Because is the new guy even going to be on the team next year, you know?
Right.
Is the new manager – I guess if they promote Randy Knorr, then the coaching staff will probably stay pretty much the same.
Right.
But if they hire somebody from the outside, don't they usually bring their own coaching staff in anyway?
Yeah, they do.
So
now, talking about Jason Wirth, would you say that this year is a career year for him?
You know, it's interesting. He's numbers-wise, yes, because he's right now he's third in the NL in batting average. He's first in slugging and first in OPS.
Wow, unbelievable!
But he's like barely top 20 in wins above replacement because that's a counting stat, not a rate stat.
Gotcha.
And so he's going to get, you know, he gets penalized for not playing it. And so I don't think you'll ever see numbers quite like this again.
Right.
But I also think that there's a chance that he'll be this valuable next year if he plays, you know, 150 games next year.
How do you also feel about him playing pretty much or batting in every single position in the lineup too? You think that helps or hurts him?
I think he's like smart enough and enough of a vet and a leader to like not care. And so that's good because you put him wherever and you make the other guys sort of do what you think is best for the other guys. I'm fine with Wirth in leadoff because he's so good at taking pitches so good at getting on base.
Yeah.
He has too much power to be a leadoff hitter. I'd rather have him bat like – I think he's actually like the ideal number two hitter.
Yeah, I can see that.
The way Span is playing now, you can talk about Span actually being a leadoff hitter again.
Right.
Which the first – maybe through the end of July, you really wanted Span in like the eighth spot. Because he has no power, and so when he's not getting on base, he doesn't do anything for you. I mean, he's a great defensive player, but so if you take it, if you take the sort of fact that maybe Span's figured it out and he is a good hitter,
mm-hmm.
then I'm good with Span leading off, and I love Span to Wirth, lefty righty, and then you put Harper third,
and then Zimmerman fourth, and then LaRoche.
Then I don't care about the lefty righty. I'd rather put the better hitter and put Desmond in.
Yeah.
And then whoever's playing first base next year.
Now, will we ever see – now, the first year Wirth was with us, he had 19 stolen bases. Do you think we'll ever see him getting – because when he was in Philly, he had 20, 20, 13, and then 19. Now he gets 8.
Right. Wirth has slowed down a little bit, I think.
But is that more him or Davey Johnson, the way he does hate stealing bases?
I don't think this team steals as much as other teams, but I also think – Wirth is like a very opportunistic base stealer,
mm-hmm.
so he only goes when he knows he's going to get it. As opposed to Desmond right now, who usually is very opportunistic but just wants to hit 20 stolen bases, so
right.
he's like going whenever he can.
I'd also like to throw this out there. I think the guy deserves a gold glove this year.
Who, Wirth?
Yes.
He's done really well.
He's had two errors all year. He's had... Let's see. Where's the other ones? Where's his assists? I can't find it now. He's had 7 assists. His fielding percentage is .991. Throughout his career, though, he's been pretty like consistent as a fielder, it looks like here.
I mean, he's a guy that you always said could play center field, which is the toughest,
mm-hmm.
toughest place. You know, I don't know if I buy all the fielding, UZR and all that stuff. They say it's very... It's very hard to do that for less than a year,
mm-hmm.
full year. Now, the last 2 years, his numbers have been not great, although this year's better than last year.
Right, right.
What I like to look at are, you know, things like their range and stuff like that, and I think he does pretty well on that.
Right.
So,
I believe this is his first full year as a right fielder, right? He used to always, let's see, in Philly, he played left field and center.
A little bit of everything, right?
Yeah, a little bit of everything.
But, I mean, he's basically played right field here, right? I mean.
It says here he played 87 games last year in center field.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Which was the most. And then in 2011, it says he played 153 in center.
Yeah.
So he played 108 in right field this year. That's his most ever in right field.
Well, I mean, he's got the arm for it. That's for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. If he doesn't get MVP, I definitely want him to get it, like either that or a Silver Slugger Award.
No, he played 134 in right field in 2011.
No, I don't know why this says that then.
But he played some center and some. He's played a lot less center. He didn't play any center this year, which was
none. He played every game in right field. It says
yeah, and that may be kind of linked with your stolen base
thing. Oh yeah,
like maybe he's sort of slowing down a little bit, but
that's true.
I mean, he's so patient and he's so smart. He's such a good player.
Yeah.
That I'm not going to sit here and say he's like they're getting their money's worth with the contract.
I hate that. Yeah, don't say that.
But if he can stay healthy, he's certainly doing.
Oh, if he can stay healthy, he's one of the best players in the National League.
Right. And the reason I don't care about the contract number is because I don't think the Nats have not gone after somebody because of money.
Exactly.
And until that happens, I don't really care what they pay anybody.
Can we also talk about tonight? He's 3-for-3. Like, he's just unbelievable.
He's on fire. He's seriously got a shot to win the batting title.
Yeah.
And he's got a good shot to win. I mean, they don't give out awards for the slugging title or the OPS title.
Which they should, but that's all. Hockey gives out every award under the sun.
I know. Isn't there some, like.
They get somebody for penalty minutes, don't they?
Isn't there some, like. Canadian, British, like, member of the royal family that they can name some sort of trophy after and give it to them for OPS.
Maybe at the end of the season we'll do our own awards.
It's not just the Nationals Review OPS award if he wins it.
And OPS
if he
award. And we'll see if we can contact him and give it to him.
If he doesn't, then we won't give the award out.
Yeah, exactly.
So we were talking about contract size and payroll and all that, and I'm going to get to that through this. I want to talk a little bit about Rafael Soriano's
great article. Let's see, when was the date on that? August 22nd you wrote this.
This is one that I was pretty proud of.
Yeah, this is pretty shocking to me when I saw it.
Yeah, it was one of those things where the data just, I mean, it was like, wow, I didn't realize what was going on. Basically, I'm not going to get into the whole article. You can read it, but the gist is the four-seam fastball, the velocity has dropped from about like 93.3 or 4 miles an hour steadily down to 93. That was back in 2009, down to 93 and 10, just under 93 and 11 and 12, and then all the way down to like 92 this year. So that's
crazy.
A mile and a half hour per
I'm
hour
assuming
drop.
Just from looking at your graph that you've created on the article, and everyone I check it out, it's the August 22nd post. It looks like when we were looking for a closer, we looked at the numbers up to 2012. Now, if you just drop off this 2013, it doesn't look as terrible, right? It looks like he's like sort of on an upswing.
Right. His velocity went back,
but
up
you look
like
at this year and it's
out.
The worst ever.
It's so far down and it hasn't changed. And basically the point of the article was that maybe he's not really a closer anymore. And what fired like sort of my brain off on this was actually FP was bitching about it. Well, it was, if you remember a couple weeks ago when Soriano went through a couple of blown saves in a row, FP was just like, you know, he gave up another single here or there. And FP was kind of like, well, you know, you don't swing and miss. This is going to happen kind of thing. And he was like annoyed at Soriano.
Right.
You could tell FP was pissed. And so I got to thinking about it. I was like, well, I wonder, you know, if his strikeouts have gone down. So I looked, and his K per nine has gone down dramatically.
Yeah, huge. This is definitely his worst year. I mean, yes, he has, what, 32 saves, 33 saves now?
Yeah.
But, I mean, when you look at this, you're like, oh, my God, this is probably it for him.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, like, if you look at the chart, you can kind of go, oh, well, 2010 and 11 – aren't that much worse than this year, but they really are. I mean, in 10 and 11, he had an 8.2 strikeout per nine both years.
Mm-hmm.
And this year he's got a 7, and it's gone up to a 7. It was not a 7 a couple weeks ago when I wrote the article.
Wow.
But that's a big difference. And 8.2 is almost somebody you call a strikeout pitcher. I mean, relievers get like 12 sometimes, right? But like a starting strikeout, a strikeout pitcher that's a starter, if you have above an 8, that's pretty good. You can't really live in the league unless you're incredibly good at inducing ground balls and not walking people under like a 6. And 7 is pretty bad. And look, I'm not sitting here saying I don't think Soriano is an effective relief pitcher.
Right.
I think he can still provide value for this team next year when they're paying him another whatever million dollars. But I really don't think he should be the closer next year.
No, I agree with you.
I really don't.
Why don't you talk about who you think?
Well, they've got two good choices.
Yep.
And one probably has a higher upside, but the other is probably a better sort of a safer pick. Mm-hmm. And the safer pick is Tyler Clippard, who's just been absolutely incredible.
Incredible. And now that we track holds, it is amazing. He has 30 holds this year.
Well, because every time he goes in, he holds it.
Yeah.
Except for the one game like last week.
Right.
But, I mean, the other guy is Storen. And Storen, I mean, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if I'd ever expect him to be back the same as he was. But, you know, we shouldn't be that shocked that Storen came back and has been awesome. He basically adjusted his delivery, which a lot of people besides me have pointed out. And he had that, like, very recognizable delivery where he would bring his knee up like with a straight locked or bring his leg up with like a straight locked knee as his like leg kick and not the typical like knee bend pull up. And he stopped doing that. And that's what he did when he was in the minors. And now he's lights out again.
Yeah. He's pitching great right now. It had to have been confidence. I mean, who doesn't forget what happened last year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there was a mechanical issue sort of with the way his, like, straight leg delivery was going or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it is, he came back, he has a different delivery, he has a lot more confidence, and he's been great. And I put in a quote from Baseball Prospectus, but I just want to read it because this is what it said in the scouting report. Mid-90s fastball, slider that incapacitates right-handed hitters like a blow dart that's been fog-rubbed.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds amazing.
I think frog-rubbed would be like the natives that would put frog poison on a dart and shoot it at people.
Gotcha. Okay.
That makes sense. How much it incapacitates right-handed hitters. And if you watch him now, his slider is incredible again.
Yeah.
And it says, and location that allows his managers to exhale. A championship caliber closer.
Wow.
And they said, and they finished it up by saying, he's a badass and there's no reason to expect that to change. Well, it did change. It's back and there's no reason to think that those things go away. The mid-90s fastball, the incredible slider, they don't just disappear. And so there was mechanical issues and he fixed it. He's got pinpoint accuracy, though, and I think the best Storen is better than the best Clippard.
Interesting.
But the question is, you now have to wonder, if you're picking between the two of them as a closer, are you going to get the best Storen all year? I don't know. You're probably going to get the best Clippard all year because you've gotten that for like 3 years now.
Right. But do you want to change him from where he is?
All I know is that those two guys should be pitching the eighth and ninth inning, or one of them should be the closer and the other should be like the swingman fireman, which, you know, you can look at.
I agree with that.
I like the idea of a setup man not always pitching the eighth. Like, take today's game where they're facing, where they're up by a run going into the seventh. Yeah. You look at the lineup sheet, and if you're playing the Red Sox and the middle of the lineup is up in the seventh, you bring your setup man in the seventh.
Exactly. I agree with that.
And bring in your
Chip Kelly offense. Adjust.
You have to adjust, right?
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I get, like, most of the time he's going to pitch the eighth, and most of the time that's when you use your setup guy, but I'm okay with pitching him in the seventh. Probably not an inning earlier, because if you do, I mean, I guess if it's like a playoff game or a really, really important game, like all of the ones that the Nats are playing now, and if your starter's up but struggling in the sixth and you want to bring somebody in to shut the inning down, yeah, maybe. But Right. Other than that, I think the setup man should pitch in either the 7th or the 8th. But anyway.
You know what's crazy, too, going back to Soriano? I just looked at saves. He is 39. I said 33 earlier. That's second in the league. Mm-hmm. But what's crazier, if you look at the top save leaders, he has the worst ERA. He's at 3.41. The next closest is 3.0. That just tells you, wow. Like that.
Well,
is
the other thing
problem.
Is, if you look at in all of Major League Baseball, he's tied for 5th in saves, but he's like top in blown saves.
Oh, you're right. I'm in NL. I see. Yeah.
So, and some of the guys with blown saves aren't really closers anymore. Like Tozawa on the Red Sox, and like I guess Bell's still the closer, but I don't know if James Russell's still the closer on the Cubs. But anyway, Soriano's top of the list in saves, but they can be sort of misleading because he's also one of the top guys in blown saves.
So weird.
He's just not having. He's not having the best year.
Right.
And that article that I wrote kind of. So to tie everything together, I kind of think it doesn't matter how much you're paying him.
Right.
You're not unless somebody wants to take him off your hands and trade him, which I say, if you can get something for him, go ahead.
Right.
If somebody goes, oh, we're going to turn it. He's going to be our closer next year and you can get closer value for him.
Have fun.
Have at it. But otherwise, I have no problem with Soriano pitching in the 7th inning. Mm-mm. Because he hasn't proven that he's your best reliever by any means. He's probably their third best reliever.
Yeah.
If that. I mean, there's a case to be made for some of the other guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's his name?
Stamen?
No,
Stamen's like a mid guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
No, what's his name? Matthews I like a lot.
Well, Matthews had such problems when he came up. But
I know.
I mean, Abad's sort of a lefty specialist, right?
Right.
But Stamen strikes out more guys than Soriano.
That's crazy to think that.
Now, Roark has been incredible, but he's more – they're sort of using him as a swing man. But Roark has been impressive. That guy is a 0.94 ERA in 10 games in 28.2 innings.
Wow.
But he's not striking – he's got a lower strikeout rate. I don't know that he's a back of the – bullpen kind of guy. I just don't. I don't think Soriano is either. Or if he is, it's sort of the front of the back of the bullpen. And so I don't know how you feel about salary, how it plays into this. But I think it's irrelevant.
I agree with you. I mean, I know the owners have tons of money, but of course that doesn't even matter. It's the point of if you can get whatever you can get that. Your value, if you created a value for yourself, fine. I don't care.
Yeah. And yeah. So you don't think that they, because he gets paid a lot more money than Clippard and Storen, that he should be the closer? Because
no, Clippard, if Clippard's better, he better, and then Clippard will get paid when he shows it.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, the guy's put in, Soriano's put in, he's had a long career so far.
Yeah.
In the league. I mean,
and
Storen.
He's been bust up and down as a closer and a setup guy. And so at this point, he should be used to it, frankly.
Right. I mean, there's always going to be a younger guy that's going to come along. But I'm with you. I actually agree. I think Tyler Clippard, I like to keep it. Of course, I agree with the whole adjusting. But if they do keep the same way where they want to keep Clippard in the 8th, I'm fine with having Storen going back to the 9th.
The way he looks now, I'm perfectly happy with you thinking. Going into next year thinking Storen is going to be your player.
Right. Let him build that confidence back up again until he knows, hey, I'm unstoppable. No one can hit my slider, and that's what we need.
Yep.
And Eric Davis. No.
They have some interesting stuff in the bullpen for next year. Some good young pitchers.
Taylor Jordan. I love him.
Well, all right. You know, let's talk about that for a minute before we go. They have... Assuming, and it's a big assumption, but assuming Detweiler's back gets better and he's ready to pitch next year.
I hope.
Detweiler's your 4th starter. Is Taylor Jordan your 5th?
You know what's hard for me? It's Taylor Jordan, it's Ross Ohlendorf, and it's, who's that third guy? Ian Kroll? No.
Tanner Roark, maybe?
Tanner Roark. Yeah, there it is. Those three are basically going to fight it out, in my opinion.
So you don't think they should spend money on a pitcher?
No way. We already have Steven Strasburg, who I think he had an incredible year. I mean, if he would have been healthy, did he, how many starts did he miss? Three? Four?
Yeah, not very many.
Right. If he would have had a full season, he would have had, he would probably been right there with Kershaw at 200 Ks.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to finish the season with like 30, 31 starts, and the most anybody does is like 34, 35.
Yeah, I think he had incredible. Jordan Zimmerman pitched out of his mind.
He'll have 200 strikeouts this year.
That's true. He'll have two more starts. Yeah, you're right. He has 181.
He has probably three more starts in him.
So Jordan Zimmerman played above and beyond what we thought. Gio Gonzalez is finally putting it together. He's like unbelievable. And still, if you look at his stats, he had a decent season and he had a bunch of Ks as well.
I'll put it this way. He and Zimmerman, well, basically, I don't know what tonight's going to do, but going into the game on the 10th, before Zimmerman start on the 10th, basically have identical ERAs.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
So.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have those three. And then Detweiler, if he pitches the way he does, there's your fourth. Why not have that fifth position being like a young guy who we're like going to build up like we built up a Zimmerman and a Detweiler?
Right. I mean, the only thing about that is none of those guys have the talent of them. So they're
true,
never.
True, that is true.
Like Taylor Jordan's ceiling is probably like a number four starter.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
I don't think that's a problem. I mean, yeah, if somebody's out there and you go, oh, I could sign that guy and he's going to be better than Jordan for sure.
But Detweiler, what is his ceiling? A number three starter?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so I'll take a number four.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that to me, if you can get that, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. But I guess it depends on what they really feel like. You know, Ohlendorf's looked good, and he's got like an ERA of like under 3.5. But
yeah.
He's pitched like 50 innings, so it's like...
I know, you didn't really get a good sample size.
Do you really think... I mean, he's 30. Do you really think this is going to be... He's going to be that good next year? You don't want to... You don't want to do what you did with
the backup outfielders. I didn't realize he's 30.
Now, Jordan maybe is that good. And maybe Tanner Roark is that... I mean, he's not as good as his numbers show, but maybe Tanner Roark is sort of a fifth starter kind of guy, too. I don't know. I'd have to see who's out there and who's available for them. I wouldn't be against them signing a guy for a short-term deal, but what I don't want
is Dan Heron.
Well, I don't want what they did with Dan Heron, which was he had a bad year last year. He's looking to prove himself somewhere. He's coming off injury, blah, blah, blah. No, if you're going to get somebody that you know is going to be a fifth starter.
Right.
And pay him like a fifth starter and pay him for a short-term one-year deal and get a league average ERA, and then you don't feel bad for, oh, my God, Taylor Jordan's pitching great. Sorry, you're the swing man. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
With Heron, they could never put him in the bullpen because they're like, it's Dan Heron. He can't go in the bullpen.
Ugh, I hate that.
And so unless you're going to go out and sign somebody that's going to, like, bump Zimmerman down to your fourth starter, which, okay, you want to do that, go ahead and do that. Don't give me one of these guys that may or may not be good, and then when he's not, you're stuck with him all year, and you're afraid to not pitch him.
Right.
Like, Heron should have not pitched for a while.
All right, one last question before we go. Danny Espinosa, will he be on this team next year?
I hope so.
I do, too.
And I'll tell you why. I'm still convinced he's hurt. And if they trade him when he's hurt, they're getting the minimal value for him. And I think that he can – the Danny Espinosa that played last year, despite being hurt in the second half of September and having a horrible April, would be like a top 10 hitting shortstop in the NL. He's a starter in the NL.
Yeah.
At shortstop. And everybody said – I mean, I don't know, but everybody says his glove is good enough to play shortstop. So – you're going to trade away a starter in the NL shortstop for nothing? Now,
am I crazy to think this? In my ultimate scenario, I would love Rendon moving to third, Zimmerman to first, and Espinosa back at second.
Well, we can talk about the construction of the team next year down the road. But down the road. But it's hard for me to trust Espinosa again because I was in love with him and he broke my heart. But... I do find it hard to believe that he's not hurt because he had, like, I think it, then off the top of my head is like 1,400 plate appearances where he was that sort of 250, 320, 430 kind of hitter.
Right.
And all of a sudden he just sucked. Well, pitchers don't figure you out after 1,400 plate appearances.
Yeah.
They figure you out after 200 plate appearances.
Exactly.
So there's something else, and I don't know what it is. And I hope it's his shoulder, and I hope he gets surgery, and then I hope he does something good.
Yeah, check out that article on August 28th on thenationalsreview.com. But we thank you all for listening. We are on iTunes now, so go to iTunes, type in Nationals, the Nationals Review Podcast.
Yes, give us stars and comments.
Exactly.
See it, iTunes. We could be on the front page of iTunes.
Yes.
Because of Colm's awesome artwork, we need stars and likes and comments and all that.
Yes.
They won't do it. So please, 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 for the sake of putting any Nationals podcast, let alone this one, on iTunes front page or sports front page, do it for that. It'll just happen to be this one, but do it for that.
No, this one. You can follow me on Twitter at Colmination, but if you want real expert analysis, you need to follow
at Nationals Review or go to thenationalsreview.com.
Yes. And we thank you all for listening and send us your comments. Please, we'd like to hear back from you. So, for everyone here at the National Review, we'll see you at the park.
See you at the park.